What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. I'm Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
We're coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Today, we're going to be smoking and talking all about UFC 261 plus the upcoming Fight Night Vegas. We're going to discuss the PFL results from the start of their Season 3 tournament. We're going to touch on some boxing and the upcoming BKFC 17. We are also going to be joined by MMA fighter London Thomas. Before we dive into all that, grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. Word. Hope you are smoking on something delicious out there, everybody. Today, me and Paul are smoking on two different kinds of flower. You've got one concentrate in your AeroPro.
Yep.
What do you got in there today, my friend?
I have no idea. I forgot.
Don't even know what it is. Something fruity and something strong.
Nah, it's actually some, like, kush some shit. But, yeah.
Is it? I hit it. I couldn't tell. I don't smoke those much anymore still.
Yeah.
But for flower, we got an old standby. We've got the ice cream cake, which is wedding cake crossed with gelato. We won't really talk too much about that because we've smoked it many a time on the show. But in this joint right here that Paul just passed me, we have got one of the more rare strains you can find. We've got some Mob Boss, which is Chem Dog crossed with Tang Tang.
All right.
Now, Chem Dog is pretty famous. I mean, it's a backbone of so many strains from OG Kush to anything Diesel and so much more. Tang Tang is a little bit harder to find information about. It's a rare sativa. Some people say it's 100% sativa strain. Others say it's still a hybrid. It's said to be a descendant of Blue Sonya, which is another very rare sativa strain. But all in all, this combines for a rare and powerful kind of flower. I'm digging it. I like Chem Dog. I like anything Diesel related. The Tang Tang, I've never been able to smoke. I have tried Pooty Tang, which is Tang Tang crossed with something I've forgotten at the moment. But that's the only time I've come across any like variant of that strain.
Hmm.
All right. Yep. Had to go out to Colorado to get this strain from a friend. I snuck it back here with me so we'd have a little bit for the show, because I couldn't find anywhere in this area, even on Leafly, any dispensaries with any Mob Boss for sale.
Yeah, I feel it.
So, if you're coming to Vegas, folks, I don't think you can find this one here.
Yeah.
But wound up with a couple joints for the show, which is cool. Ice cream cake, always a winner as well, and we'll get into that. You brought a new piece with you today.
Yeah, a little bubbler.
I like that. I need something like this, man. I broke my good shit. What did this run you?
Like $25.
Really? Where did you get it? Anywhere special or just just a local smoke shop? Well, word. Let's keep puffing this down and let's talk about some combat sports, my friend.
Absolutely. So, what a night of fights.
Yeah, this weekend produced some winners, man.
What a weekend of fights, dude. Don't forget the PFL on Friday, too, which is great.
Yeah, we had a lot of action and a lot of upsets. A
lot of upsets.
And a lot of knockouts on the UFC card.
Yeah, a lot of five finishes.
Yeah, nothing on the UFC pay-per-view went past the second round.
No. Just nuts.
Absolutely. We've been complaining a lot about fucking UFC cards.
Yeah.
Whew.
So, we are going to get into a little bit of a, you know, discussion a little bit about how these fights have, you know, decided where we're going to go from here.
Yeah, there's a lot of aftermath.
There's a lot of aftermath to talk about. Yeah, so let's just start from the top. You know, so we have Kamaru Usman comes out and scores a second round KO of Jorge Masvidal.
And let's set the scene for everybody who might not be current on what's happening with that. That is, of course, a rematch.
Mm-hmm.
And Masvidal took the fight in the past on 6 days' notice.
6 days' notice.
And he lost a 5-round decision, rather. Yeah. I think it was unanimous all the way around. It was very one-sided.
Yeah.
And he talked a lot of shit this whole time about full camp. It was full camp Masvidal.
Softest hitter he's ever.
Yeah, he took all this shit for 5 rounds. He hit like a chump.
Yeah.
In the fight, every time he was getting tagged up, which looked like his head was snapping back, and then he was kind of clowning and laughing or whatever. And we'll get into some of that more later, but he winds up getting slept.
Yeah, just freaking out, like, stiffed. That shit was rough.
It's kind of ironic because he's going to himself be the content of memes right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he got slept. He talked all that shit. He had Usman standing over him while he was out cold.
And then Usman also steals his line in the press conference saying that the strikes after were super necessary.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Yeah, really?
After that fight part. Press conference, he said they were super necessary.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So, stole his line, too, so shit.
Dude, Usman's been working with Trevor Whitman.
Actually, can I ask you something real quick,
though? Of course.
What the fuck is going on? I thought we're not interviewing people after they get knocked out.
Dude, that's the same thing I said last night. What are we doing? Why is Joe Rogan talking to people who just got knocked the fuck out?
Every time.
I don't like it.
I didn't like it at all.
I thought he was done with that. No, I didn't understand why we're
going
doing
out
it.
We're at Joe Rogan trying to talk to Chris Weidman, who's laying on the mat. I was like, oh my God, dude, people are savages online. But yeah, that's weird. I don't know what's going on with that. Because, like, Masvidal got flatlined.
And he didn't
then,
need
like,
to be
they woke him
the
up and they're like, hey, bro, you want to talk about it? Like, same thing with, Zhang Weili. They did the same thing to her. She got flatlined and she got woke up.
She didn't even know how flatlined she was until she looked at the fucking replay. She thought it was a bad stoppage at first. Like, no, girl, you just were asleep
got
for a second and don't realize.
And then the funny ass little, back and forth with Valentina and Joe in the post fight was pretty funny.
It was too much, though. He shouldn't be doing that. I hope that it doesn't come back.
Yeah,
like,
it was strange.
That was terrible.
He said, like, he didn't. Maybe it's the UFC asking him to do it because he personally said, like, on multiple occasions that he didn't like doing that. So
yeah, I didn't like that.
I didn't either.
What I did like is I kind of liked seeing Masvidal get quieted down, man. I haven't liked him lately. Dude, I went from a fan to, like, really not a fan.
Yeah.
Of his antics.
A little sour on him.
His whole persona has just and it's like, not just me. I mean, it's a big thing with his popularity right now. Like, it's a known factor that that's happened.
Yeah. Well, I just feel like everything that he stood for was like, you know, the guy who was from the streets, coming from the bottom, did it his way, was kind of like marred now by like all this little, you know, like pay for work things he does, like. That he doesn't really care how it smears his image. He'd rather just gets paid off doing it. You know what I mean?
Like, well, look how MMA fans in the arena reacted to Jake Paul on multiple occasions. There were "fuck Jake Paul" chants echoing through there, right? And who is Masvidal lined himself up with?
Jake Paul. Yeah.
No, I mean, and that's just one facet of what's going on.
Crowd was so rowdy, though.
That crowd was awesome.
It was fucking rowdy.
They loved it. Dude, I wish they were like that. I mean, if they cheered like that for the first prelim card in every fucking event, that would be awesome.
That was kind of weird when they were booing Zhang Weili, though. I was like, what the fuck?
It's more booing the communist government that she
represents,
not her.
I get that, but still, yeah, that's why I don't get people that are like, come on, guys, she's just a fighter. Like, she doesn't really, like, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of fucked up. She doesn't, like, she lives here now.
No, she doesn't.
Yeah, she does. She's lived the last year here.
She's still a Chinese citizen.
Well, yeah,
of course. She's not a citizen of the U.S.
Well, yeah, it's because it's where she's from. Yeah. She barely even speaks English.
Yeah. So, I mean, she might be staying here momentarily, but...
I don't know. She seems like she's trying to... That's what we talked about a little bit before, though. Is like, I feel like she's kind of tried... When she was champion, was trying to, like, you know... Trying to learn English and appease to the like, you know, her fans and stuff like that.
The problem in my mind is that the UFC seems hell bent on associating associating fighters with their home country.
Oh yeah.
And it like it's this massive thing that we have to.
That's why I like the Venom a little bit
better.
Like
it's a thing with a capital T.
Yeah.
Like it's a fucking thing.
Yeah, that's what we talked about before. They start kind of Venom has kind of gone away from that now.
And I appreciate that because it's too much, to me, it's too much division. Mm-hmm. And the problem
is... They treat it
like
it's Olympics or something.
Is so she isn't just her.
Yeah.
She's from China.
Yeah, I get
and so China represents a lot of bad things
that we've
vowed not to discuss on this podcast because it's all political. But I mean, China is not... They're a very oppressive government.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing all kinds of shit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem. So yeah. She's not just her, she's China, because the UFC tells you non-fucking-goddamn-stop. It's Chinese, this. Yeah, just like, true. I mean, I don't understand it. I wish you just, it's like they put more focus on the country, even if it's like a country that's kind of obscure.
Like Brazilians and
I mean,
like
no disrespect whatsoever to Kamaru Usman, but he's, the UFC is like, he's our first Nigerian champion. Is he? Because when he tried out for the Olympic team, I don't think he was trying out for the Nigerian team. He was trying out for the United States team. He came here when he was 5. Yeah. I mean, he was Texas State champion. He represented the U.S. in the World Wrestling Championships. I'm not trying to talk shit. I'm just saying.
No, I get what you're saying.
But they're like, he's Nigerian.
Well, here's the thing. There's one thing with being in touch with your roots, and there's another thing by them trying to sell to a certain demographic, so they're trying to freaking make it of, oh, look, he's the Nigerian.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything about him naming himself as Nigerian Nightmare carrying the flag. That's his roots. I'm talking about the UFC saying
using it as a bargaining
tool. He's our champion from Africa. Did you see that promo? We have 3 African champions now from the continent of Africa. Like, okay, yes, technically, but like, you're just harping on this so much. Like, he's actually a U.S. citizen, and he represented, like, if you're fighting for the U.S. in the goddamn Olympics, I don't know how you're the Nigerian UFC champion.
Yeah.
I'm just like, come on.
There's a difference between being in touch with your roots and the UFC using it as a fucking promotional.
Yeah, that's all I'm talking about is UFC. And the only reason they're doing that is because Dana and the guys at Endeavor are like, think how big we can get with selling pay-per-views in Africa.
Well, then what they'll do is they'll fucking go and they'll make a performance center in Africa. They'll freaking, because they're doing one in Puerto Rico. They did one in China.
Same thing they're doing in China, because it's the market. It's the dollar bills.
Exactly.
So they're trying to force, like, this nationality origin on people, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just for dollar bills, not because it's an interesting part of their story. Fucking Kamaru Usman's whole story isn't he's Nigerian.
I liked how they leaned into the story of his father and all that stuff like that.
That's cool. I mean, that's I'm not saying anything about his personal representation. Yeah, like, I'm talking about the corporation who's simply trying to exploit a region because now they're like, oh, shit, oh, that gives us a key into their region to sell more fucking money, to make more
money. They do the same thing with Francis and the same thing with Stylebender, too. Stylebender is he's basically, in everyone else's eyes, he's from New Zealand. And they constantly the same thing. They keep talking. Although Stylebender's in touch with his roots, just like Usman is, and that's great.
Their personal representation is not what we're talking
about
here at all.
But the UFC is trying, because the UFC has put him in fights and gave him the freaking New Zealand flag before, and then now they have the Nigerian flag because they're choosing. I don't know if he's choosing that or they're choosing that, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's them.
You know, so circling back to the subject matter, I get why people are annoyed when the fans boo her. But I also, I can't get annoyed at the fans because the UFC's taught them that these people represent the country, the country.
When you look at
country.
It that way, I agree with you.
And that's what I think that they were booing. It's like, oh, it's
I'm
communist
just saying
China.
From a fucking, athlete point of view, like, she's a great athlete.
She's amazing.
Losing that fight is not the end of her, Zhang Weili. Like, that fight, you can run that back next, like, straight up. Like, every one of these champions, I don't see how you can't, because every single one of these other strawweight champions, after they lose, get to run it back right away.
Well, she was not a dominant champion. I mean, she had a
the same thing, though. They gave Rose, they gave everyone a rematch.
But that was when the division was, like, super short on contenders and brand new, and they were not there anymore.
Well, what I'm saying is when you're deciding between Carla Esparza and fucking a rematch with Zhang Weili, I'd much rather watch the Zhang Weili rematch than Carla Esparza. No offense to Carla.
I haven't looked at the rest of the division to see who else is up around 25, but
they all have
15,
lost.
But
Carla's the only one on a win streak, other than your girl Mackenzie Dern, and I don't think she's ready for a title shot yet.
No, Rose would eat her up.
Yeah,
right now.
Dude, they're talking about doing her and Joanna next.
Joanna fuck her up too.
That's what they're talking about.
I'm not
about
saying in the future Dern might not win that fight, but now?
Yeah,
I mean, she's improved, but she's not world class.
Yeah.
I mean, her jiu-jitsu, I'm not going to talk about.
But yeah, that weight class is kind of in a weird spot now because, like, I do think you can run it back with Zhang Weili and not have to really. I don't see any other real, like.
So I didn't hear anybody calling for that at all. Like, some of the fights that
Dana said after in the press conference, he's like, we'll just run that right back. I'm just going off what Dana was saying in the post fight, because Dana said, like, this was the only, like, post fight press conference I've ever seen him, like, literally say, I don't, you know, you guys know I don't do my matchmaking on the night after or the night of a fight, but on this one, I do have two fights that are just like, in those two fights, he said that and Colby and Usman are like the fights that are pretty much made.
Huh, okay.
Like, because, yeah, I don't know. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, because originally this card was supposed to be in China and this is all this shit, so I could see them doing something like that down the line.
Well, we'll get to that fight here in a second. Let's finish up here with Usman and Masvidal. What's next for Usman? Who knows?
Nah, it's Colby.
I mean, I'm sorry. I meant George. Usman. I meant yeah. George. Who knows? I mean, his popularity is taking a hit. Yeah. His marketability is taking a massive hit now. And he's... Colby's not going to want to fight him after that, even if he wasn't fighting Usman. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit of something that tied into
he's
that.
He's got that Leon Edwards smoke, but does Leon want to fuck around with George Masvidal?
Nah.
I mean, Leon's getting left out the picture again.
Leon's got Nate.
I mean, yeah, he's got Nate.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that fight's booked. He's going to have something in the future, I'm just thinking.
Well, that's what's weird with this. This is the biggest thing that's weird to me with Dana, how he just kind of announced that Colby and Usman were next, because... like we just talked about, you have Leon Edwards and Nate Diaz in, what, 3 weeks from now? 2 weeks from now? Something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then you turn around, and then you also have Wonder Boy versus Gilbert Burns on July 10th. So you have two fights where kind of all – if the three guys we think are going to win, kind of all three of these guys have, like, claim to the belt. Because if Leon wins and fucking Wonder Boy wins – Wonder Boy would be on a four fight win streak and be in the three or two in the division, and then
I'm
Leon is
kind
of like, so like I don't
yeah,
I like Colby
those two, yeah.
I like Colby, don't get me wrong, I like the Colby fight, but I just find it kind of weird how Dana just goes right after, just like already had his mind made up. Oh, Colby, when you have two huge divisional fights in the next 2 months,
well,
and there's
been
no way Usman's gonna fight in 2 months from now.
He'd been talking about that before the fight, that Colby was next for the winner.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like a new idea. Like, so, I mean, I heard that a week or two before the fight.
Yeah. Still, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like there's going to be shifts in the division that happen before that fight ever happens. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they can get the winner then.
Yeah, true.
We'll see. What about...
Oh, and Masvidal as well. I think Nick Diaz is going to fight Masvidal next.
Masvidal would probably like that. I mean, did you hear the crowd erupt when they showed Nick?
Yeah, they fucking were fucking on fire. And then Justin Gaethje got all mad because they weren't as on fire for him.
Dude, that's Nick Diaz, bro.
Nick
Justin's,
Diaz
you're awesome, but that's
God,
Nick
top,
fucking
pop.
Diaz, dude.
That was like the almost like the level of pop that like Ben Askren got when he was at Madison Square Garden. Remember, that shit was like that level. Like those were probably the two biggest pops I've ever seen from a crowd from just showing like a guy's face.
And Nick... I mean,
Nick's
he's starting
like
to get the legendary OG. Type OG status, just even with people that aren't the hardcores. They hear the name and they're like, oh, that guy Nate's older brother. I heard he was some shit, because they don't know.
Yeah.
They just
well,
heard,
let's just be honest.
Like,
Nick Diaz was not even his best in the UFC. Like, if you watch Nick Diaz before the UFC.
Oh, his Strikeforce days.
Strikeforce days, those pride fights he had. Dude, he was a fucking savage.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, people don't know, like, you got to go back and watch some Nick Diaz fights if you want to see, like, classic Nick
Diaz.
Yeah,
don't watch UFC Nick Diaz fights. They're not that great.
Well, I mean, some of them
some
are good,
okay, but you want to see
Nick
watch,
like,
in his top
Anderson
form.
Don't watch, like, the Anderson
Silva fight. No, watch
Strikeforce. Or, like, the GSP fight. Like, if you watch some Strikeforce Nick Diaz, like that Paul Daly Nick Diaz fight, it's probably, like, one of the greatest fights I've ever seen. And it was only, like, a round and a half, right?
Yep.
So, like, yeah, I really would like to see Nick come back against someone like George. I think it would make a lot of sense for him.
George would take that, I'm sure. Nick could probably win that fight. He's not going to have to deal much with wrestling. I don't know what Nick's been doing. Nick's an enigma to me now. It's been 5 years,
he's
6 years.
He's shredded, though.
He's in shape.
You see those fucking... He, like, posted some video of him training for a triathlon or some shit, dude, and he looked fucking shredded.
Yeah, he's off his drunken...
Yeah.
His drunken minutes.
Yeah.
Days, whatever
he's
he was doing.
He's fucking shred city. So is Nate, too. Like, him and Nate look like they just, like, have re... You know, sometimes, like, some time away from the sport, you know, kind of just, like...
Yeah, but time away for those two is, like, I'm going to go do a triathlon.
True.
It's not
the
time away, like, where fighters go get a fucking 10-pound pot
belly. They do party hard, though. They party hard for sure. That's without a doubt. But they do live pretty clean lifestyles. They fucking, I'm pretty sure both of them are like vegetarians.
Right? Yeah, they're both vegetarians and they're both. Yeah.
So like,
I mean, out of shape for
there's
the
a lifestyle they live that is not out of shape to other people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, out of shape for them isn't out of shape for like me and you.
Yeah, no way. Yeah.
So let's move on from that fight and talk about the co-main event.
Yeah. Well, we kind of did talk about the co-main event. Let's talk about Valentina.
Yeah, let's talk about Valentina.
What a fucking
Jessica Andrade
evolution of, like, I've never seen someone develop so quickly in one aspect of their game in such a short time.
Yeah, she wins the fight by second round TKO. Mm-hmm. And you know, prior to the fight, her last fight with Jennifer Maia, she got taken down a little bit. And
yeah,
people were like, oh, that's her weakness.
Yeah.
And Andrade is strong in that area. Plus, she hits hard. Mm-hmm. And she's just strong, period. She's fought in three different weight classes, up at 35, down at 15, now to 25.
Yep.
And people were thinking this is going to be her toughest test ever.
Me included. I thought, well, not her toughest test. I just thought she was the most dangerous opponent she's had.
Fucking Valentina was like, hold my fucking vodka. Let me show you something. And
she took it down seven times in the first
round.
Seven
takedowns, yeah. Five in the first round, two in the second.
Okay.
You know, she gets her in the crucifix and just elbows the ever-living fucking shit out of her.
Yep.
She landed like 30 strikes to 10, so it wasn't just all wrestling. She was her usual striking mastery, fast as hell.
Yeah.
Was piecing her up, gave her a black eye in the first, you know. But those takedowns, it wasn't like she was just getting a double leg and dragging her down or anything.
She's in those body locks.
Fierce takedowns, slamming her.
Mm-hmm.
Like tripping her, slamming her, right in side control.
Yep.
Pure dominant, like ass kicking.
Just going to work.
I always expect to be amazed because I've grown to respect her as a martial artist probably more than just about anybody else in the game.
Yeah.
But it was just an unbelievable ass kicking.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, Andrade had absolutely nothing for her. Not even fucking close.
Yeah, literally zero for her.
I'm going to beat you on the feet. I'm going to beat you on the ground. I'm going to show you how to
shit you gonna do
slam the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Crucifix you and pound the shit out of you with elbows. Mm-hmm. And then she got up and she was like, said something to the effect of, you know,
come get some.
Everybody's out here looking for my weaknesses. Don't waste your fucking time because there aren't any.
Zero.
And like, that was just cold. Like, because it's not bullshit. That's not just hype. Like, where is she weak at?
And one thing I talked to you a little bit about during the week is I think Valentina has like one of the most low-key camps that are just like one of the most top-notch like operations in the UFC. Because, you know, she's got her head coach. He's got like an assistant coach with him. And then she's got her sister. And they kind of run almost like kind of like nomad style.
Don't they call them like a nomad camp? She doesn't have a real base of operations.
She doesn't have like a base. She doesn't really have like a she has like a gym where she goes to trains and shit. Like, but no like home base. No like, so she'll just go all over and just train with high level athletes all over the world. And you know, and if she can't do that, she'll just go to a gym and train with her sister. You know what I mean? Who is a high level athlete as well. So like, she just is just constantly picking up all these different things that just make her just get better and better and better.
Yeah. Fast, it seems. Mm-hmm. Or maybe this type of wrestling was always there and she just chose not to execute it. But what impressed me so much is, dude, she's doing something that only incredibly, incredibly gifted mixed martial artists can do, which is take the other person's strength and decide, okay, I'm going to do this against you because this is what you're supposed to be strong at, and then whooping them. Like, you see John Jones do that. You've seen other champions do that from time to time by choice. And Valentina, I don't know who's next for her, but nobody's going to beat her for a very long time. She takes everything very serious.
The only fight that makes any sense would be for someone to beat her. It'd be like, you know, the best.
Yeah, it's got to be another fight with Amanda.
That's
what it would take, is somebody who's fighting all the way up at 45 and is bigger. So when you have, you know, two people of close, similar skill sets, skill-wise, like maybe levels. I know they have different strengths. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying, you know, then size comes into play. That's why. That's why I think there's a lot of interest in that fight.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it was both their, like, best test, I think, too. It's like, people want to see who, how much more dominant, like, you know, Amanda can continue to be. And then, like, really only the question to her dominance was Valentina. And then on the same side, Valentina was, you know, undefeated in the UFC, and then was freaking ran into Amanda, and those were fights were close. And those are really her only UFC losses.
I wish. I mean, I guess I understand that they have to do a differentiation in the pound for pound list, these for men and women.
Yeah.
But I kind of wish that they didn't. It's just a mythical list anyways. I mean, where would you put Valentina Shevchenko on the list of just mixed martial artists, pound for pound?
Shit, bro.
I mean, she'd be right up there near the top. I mean, I'm not saying she's the best. I'm just saying you'd have to include her in the conversation of pound for pound great mixed martial artists right now.
Skill-wise, yeah.
Yeah, of course. That's all it is. You know, we're talking about
pound for pound. That's not how I view the pound for pound.
I mean, that's literally what it means. It means if they're all the same size,
yeah, if pound for pound the same,
then who would be the best?
See, that's where I've got. That's why I like there being. I'm not even gonna go there. Not gonna go there with it.
All right. Well, she's making short work of anybody else she meets.
She's
soon.
A beast, though. Not lying. She is a beast. But I do think there's a. Not gonna go there.
All right, well, what about Anthony Smith versus Jimmy Crute? Like, I think you had picked Crute to win last week. I can't remember if I did or not. I think it was sentimental with Anthony, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah,
but he came out and made a statement win here. I talk a lot on the show about jabs. His jab was on point. The fight ended with a tremendous kick to the back of the knee, which just deadened Crute's whole leg. Like, Crute did a good job in that
first round. He
staying in it.
Yeah, the first round it happened and it kind of deadened a little bit, but then he blast doubled Anthony and took him down. So it's
Anthony was coming in.
Yeah,
fell.
He thought
back.
he was gonna finish him.
Yeah, and Anthony was rushing in, so he wasn't prepared. Boom. And then Crute kind of rose up on his knees basically, and then turned that into a takedown. That's how powerful the guy.
Dude's
is.
Dude's got real serious athleticism.
Yeah, for real.
And he's still young, so this is not.
No, his career's not over. Yeah. But Anthony. You know, we've mistakenly discussed his age on the show because he just seems like he's older.
Well, because he has 50 fights.
He's only 32, which he pointed out afterwards that a lot of people think he's done. He was like, I'm still improving. I'm 32. I'm in my fucking prime, and I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah. We'll
see. And I think his performance showed that. And this will lead into the next topic, but I was watching him, and if you haven't seen it, his post-fight interview with the media is happening while the Weidman-Uriah Hall fight is taking place.
Yeah.
And he trained with Weidman for this camp quite a bit. And he had talked before how he couldn't even understand how anybody's beaten Chris Weidman. About that's how dialed in Weidman was. He said he was mopping the fucking gym with him. And he was just so fucking... the leg break happened.
During
the interview, he's like, he heard the crowd. You can hear it in the interview. He's like, what was that? What happened out there right now? What happened? And then they tell him, and he's just like that's his friend. He's all like, oh my fucking God. Like, it's an emotional video.
That's crazy.
People listening should check it out. But that kind of leads into the, you know, we have to talk about the Uriah Hall, Chris Weidman fight, which if those of you tuning in somehow haven't heard, there's a horrific leg break suffered by Weidman on the very first kick he threw in the very first round. And Weidman, of course, if those listening aren't familiar, was a former middleweight champion, and he was the first man to really beat Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
And then he knocked Anderson out, and a lot of people thought it was just lucky. So Anderson gets the rematch because he was Anderson. And in that rematch, Chris checked the leg kick from Anderson, and that was how Anderson horrifically broke his foot.
Yeah.
And it's like the exact same thing happened to Weidman here now, like all these years later.
It was literally the same sequence, too. Like, he kicked it, and then he rolled back, thought his foot was there, went to step on it, fell straight in the face.
You know, I got the Chris Weidman Reebok jersey on today in support.
I didn't even notice you were wearing
that. I know, because you can't tell. That's how bad the Reebokers are. I mean, look on the camera right there if you're looking. Do you know this is a Chris Weidman? You got to turn it on the back. You can see the Weidman.
There you go.
They put nothing. I'm so glad Reebok's gone. But Venom, please put something on the front so people know. Like, no.
I feel it.
If I didn't mention that, people wouldn't even know. Like, I'm trying to wear a Chris Weidman jersey in support. Fuck. Anyways, I mean, dear God, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt bad, and it was shocking when it happened to Anderson. And I was a fan, because who's not a fan of Anderson? But it was different. This one hit me different. Like, I still feel kind of shook after seeing that and watching it. And Weidman, I feel a bit of a connection to. I've been a fan.
Yeah.
I really thought he
was horrific.
I was hoping he's going to come back and do something here. I was excited to hear Anthony Smith talk about how good he was in the training camp. And what can you say, man? Dear God.
It's terrible.
And to a much lesser extent, of course, you know, this also is going to affect Uriah Hall, who, and I mean no disrespect, is a mentally unstable fighter. I don't mean he's crazy or mentally unstable in the real life. I mean, as a fighter, his mental game is all over the fucking place. Yeah. And he is the type of guy who, in the past, like when he's
you
not
see his
people
face
out,
when it
has
happened?
Felt fucking guilty for it and not been the same afterwards and intentionally tried to not hit as hard afterwards. Mm-hmm. This ain't his fault, but it is, like, at the same time.
You see his face when it happened?
He's He just went and he wouldn't even look at it, dude. He went and fucking kneeled in the looking out the cage. And
damn.
Like, is he going to come back and fight again after that? I mean,
Well, I mean, obviously, I think he is, but I'm just saying.
But I see
what you're saying. It could definitely. So, for someone who is, like, in the past had said he's had problems hurting people, that is not the best thing. Kind of same thing with Rose. Like, same shit.
Dude, the noise.
Luckily, there was a crowd. Imagine if that was a fucking silent arena and Chris Weidman broke his leg. Oh, my fucking God, dude. That would have been like, they would have had to blur it, like, fucking bleep it out. Because you could hear it on the broadcast, but imagine if there was zero crowd there.
Oh, man.
It would have been just even more devastating.
You know, and obviously, Chris Lee was on a stretcher. They compressed everything. He never moved other than screaming and crying.
I mean, I just hope he didn't splinter the bone, because he fucking kicked, stepped back, and tried to put his weight on it, and fucking it
there was the bone was gone, you know.
Flopping.
Breaks are called breaks even when it's just a hairline fracture. Yeah. And, like, I mean, this, like,
that was a compound fracture.
Snapped it in half, man. Yeah. Like, that motherfucker.
Yeah.
I mean, luckily, Anderson came back and fought for 7 years, you know, but I don't know if Chris is going to...
Yeah, but did he?
did he?
You called that, like, I don't know.
1-9-1, yeah, or something similar. 1-7-1 if you take the two Weidmans out.
Yeah.
You know, his wife has come out after the event and the following morning and released a statement that the surgery went well.
Yeah.
And, of course, we wish him a speedy recovery.
Absolutely.
But that was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
as far as
terrible, yeah.
You know, Anthony talked about that at the end. He said something just at the ass end of his interview. He was like, man, sometimes I don't even know why we fucking do this.
Yeah.
And it's like, these guys risk, we always hear it.
Yeah.
These guys risk their life, and people think that's a bit of a dramatic statement. Maybe it is, because we don't see people dying all the time. But shit fucking happens. His life ain't ever going to be the same, dude. Oh, he's always going to feel that forever.
Yeah, for sure. Like, without a doubt.
So he makes some money,
and Chris Weidman,
someone
who's had tons of surgeries already.
As if he hadn't have enough bad luck. You could look at his last fights and just, you could make the case that simple little mistakes or quote unquote bad luck or the tiny bad decision has just derailed things that would have turned out completely different.
Yeah.
One right after the fucking other.
Yep.
And now.
It is where it is.
This poor man. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like we said. Just got to wish him a speedy recovery, and hopefully he comes back. We'll see what happens.
UFC's got to pay these guys more money.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's without a doubt. Well, let's transition over to another event that happened on Friday night.
Yeah, there was a lot more to talk about on that card, but otherwise we'll talk about the UFC the whole show. But the Professional Fighters League had their season 3 debut, right?
Their season, yep. In the main event, we saw Clay Collard upset Anthony Pettis.
Big upset. Pettis was -600 betting. Collard was +4. I thought about placing a bet on Collard, but I can't get around too well at the moment, and I just couldn't
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, like, I think Pettis is putting a little too much pressure on himself.
He does that sometimes, it seems.
Like, he was talking about in the pre-fight interviews about how he wanted to be, he was going to put this promotion on his back and he was going to be the face again. And, like, all that is fine and dandy, but you don't want to put that out into the public because then you're just putting more public pressure on yourself. And then when shit like this happens, it kind of...
Yeah, I'm not trying to sound like an asshole, and I don't mean it's easy to say this with hindsight, and we wouldn't be saying it if he'd won, et cetera, et cetera. But win a fight in the fucking new promotion before you start saying you're going to carry the weight of the whole promotion on your back.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, just get your feet wet a minute.
Yeah. And that was a good fight. It wasn't like he was just like blown out of the water.
He came back in the third, right? It was a decision, but he kind of got pieced up in the first two, but yeah. He came on strong in the third, right? What did you think?
I just don't think he was ready for that, like, boxing style that Collard had. Was he was just pressuring him. Because that's the thing, is, like, Anthony Pettis is really great with his kicks. And how do you stop someone from kicking you? Closing the distance. You know, there's no room to kick. So I feel like it was good. It was, like, it was good experience for Pettis, though, because he, like, this isn't the end of the line for him. These are a season. So, like, you know.
Right,
he
I mean,
still
he
has the opportunity
a point
to get.
Or two and
yeah, he still gets opportunity
gets three
to
or
get
four.
To
yeah.
the fucking final, or the tournament, or whatever the playoffs.
And yeah, it's not like since it's not like other MMA, a loss doesn't just yeah. he's not just that's
not
it.
Just done. Yeah, no. Like this is a tournament, ultimately a season and then a playoff. So
it's a season,
just like,
yeah.
Yeah, he's got a chance to come back. I just feel like. This was good experience for him, and also, like I said, I feel like he just put a little too much pressure on himself. He still got time. And then also, in the co-main event, we saw Bubba Jenkins with the upset of the night, defeating Lance Palmer 30-27 on the scorecard.
I mean, Lance Palmer's on like an 11-fight winning streak, back-to-back million-dollar season winners.
I think he was 16 or something.
And I believe that it wound up being... 4-1 across the board as far as the rounds, I mean, yeah. decision-wise.
Oh, no, it was three rounds.
Three rounds?
Yeah,
oh,
it was 30-27.
30-27? Okay, yeah. I thought it was five for some reason. I don't know where I got that from.
It was a COVID.
But it was dominant from what I are. What point being, it was dominant. I didn't get to watch that one, but I read up everything I could on it. It seemed Bubba just put on a clinic, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. And like we talked about a little bit last week, Bubba was a better wrestler than him in college, and they had their back and forth in college. But Bubba Jenkins always got the best of him. And what did he do in this fight? He more or less wrestled him the whole time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Oh, shit.
Y'all right there? That was a big hit. This bubbler hit's nice, man.
Yeah.
What are you smoking on, folks? Let us know in the comments. Wherever you're watching, wherever you're listening in, there should be some comments below that you can type that in.
But yeah. So... kind of wraps up the PFL. I mean, we'll be talking about a ton of fights as they come up.
Absolutely. You know, and I think now, before we get into the fight night for next week, let's go ahead and join. We have London Thomas coming in for an interview. All right. Today, we're joined by local Las Vegas MMA fighter London Thomas. London, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. It's great to have you here today. So... before we get started on some of the other topics like the UFC 261, why don't you tell us and our listeners a little bit about your career? I know you fight for Tough Enough right now. What's going on with that?
Well, Tough Enough, we're just trying to get back rolling. The whole no fans thing is hard, especially for earlier, like, little promotions. So we just waiting. I'm hearing from Jeff, who runs Tough Enough. He's saying he's ready to get it going this summer. So I'm like, perfect. I'm ready to go late June, early July. So I'm like, that's perfect for me. But basically, I've been with Tough Enough since 2018. Should have way more fights than I have. I've had so many scheduled. But I've been with Tough Enough. Tough Enough is a good promotion. I think it gets you like an idea of how it's going to feel when you move over to the big scene. Because like... how Tough Enough is, you never know who's going to be in the building. You might look to the left, Cowboy Cerrone's right there. You might look to the right, Mayweather's right there, Mayweather Sr. So it's cool. You never know who's in the audience. It's a big opportunity. And now they just transferred over to UFC Fight Pass. So it's even bigger views now.
Paul and I had talked about going to some Tough Enough shows, but then, of course, COVID came in and shut everything down. But, you know, with the governor opening up here, I think he said June with the casinos and everything, I think the fights could be coming back with crowds.
Yeah, so July 10th is supposed to be the first full crowd fights. So
we're hoping to see you back in there pretty soon. That would be awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so let's tell people a little bit about your background. Obviously, we know each other because we wrestled since we were kids. How do you feel like wrestling and how that prepared you to, like, be in front of a crowd, that pressure of, like, in an arena, stuff like that?
Honestly, I think people always say wrestling is the base for MMA, but from a standpoint of – that's also true, but from a standpoint of being ready to get out and go into a fight, I think it's the best thing. Honestly, like – everything about wrestling and MMA is basically the same outside of you're not getting punched in wrestling. Like the weight cutting, the prepping before a match, knowing how to warm up correctly, knowing how to compete and not burn out too much energy. Like that's all key factors to getting ready to go to a fight, because most of these guys, I see these guys in the back and they're all hyped up and they just killed themselves during a warm up. And then they go out there and fight, and then first round they just burn through their energy, and then now they're gassed out. Like, you have to understand how to be calm, but also have enough energy to be out there to fight consistently. A lot of guys don't understand that unless you went and wrestled at a high level. You understand how to get ready for a fight and how to calm those nerves. Because, I mean, when I used to wrestle, I used to be terrified. And I just looked at it one day, probably around 16, I was like, how is being nervous going to help me? I said that in my head, and after that, I stopped being nervous for competition, and that's helped me compete at the level I know I should be, because I'm not going to be timid. I'm not going to hold anything back, and it's going to make me perform the way I'm going to perform when I'm in a room.
All right. Well, and then also, as far as, like, the preparation, like, the training and the intensity, do you feel like wrestling and MMA are kind of on that same par, whereas, like, both are just extremely intense and you're kind of able to push harder than some of those other guys because you've been through all that kind of stuff?
Oh man, 100%. When it gets set out, that grind period in that sparring room, 100%, I just go back to wrestling because remember this hell days or when you're going against multiple people and the coach is like, all right, five guys, you go in with Paul, you go in with London, and we have five people just constantly every minute rotating on you, a fresh body, and you're tired, but as soon as it's time to go with the next person, they're in your face pushing you, like giving you no space to breathe. When you get into those hard sparring rounds, because it's no secret that in MMA you got a lot of meatheads in sparring. When you get into those hard rounds, you gotta know, like, I gotta dig in, I gotta be technical sound, I gotta be prepared for whatever. You don't really know what the other person is thinking sometimes unless y'all are normal sparring partners. So when you're getting tired and you're getting constantly people rotating on you with rounds, I have to just think back to wrestling. With Garcia is like, let's go, let's keep going, pressure. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go back to my wrestling roots and I'm gonna weather this and accept it for what it is.
Well, let's talk about the big events of this last weekend here with UFC 261. I mean, we had three title fights. We all watched it.
Well, let's just start off from the Valentina fight. How do you feel like her wrestling really changed her game in that fight? Because everyone kind of talked about how in her last fight, she was kind of exposed as this person who was a great striker, but was kind of on 50-50 when it came to wrestling. How do you think, like, what did she really change that really helped her in that fight?
Look, with her wrestling, what I seen in that Andrade fight was insane, because she was out there wrestling like she's been wrestling her whole life, like she was like on a world team. The way she was getting into body locks and finishing and stepping behind the leg and just anytime she get into the body lock and finish, like, you know, a body lock, I mean, it's not easy to get into, but when you're standing, you know, right next to each other, you can get into a body lock. But in fighting, being able to gauge that distance and get into a body lock and the timing on that is completely different. The fact that she was able to utilize that so well and just finish all takedowns at will, she looked like she's been doing it forever. So, like, that really surprised me. I was like, I knew she could grapple because I've seen her body lock plenty of people. When she fought Joanna, she was body locking her.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, she has a good body lock, but the way she was finishing and chaining it together in Andrade's fight was insane. That's definitely like her adding that to her game makes a real good case for a rematch with Amanda Nunes, because Amanda Nunes was out grappling her before in those two fights, but now that she has that going, that makes for a great matchup.
Yeah, I think it definitely changes the dynamic of the fight, because before, like, I feel like in both fights, the striking was almost like a little bit on Valentina's side, but I felt the grappling in every situation was in Amanda's, like, in Amanda's, like, wheelhouse. I feel like if Valentina's able to, like, step her game up, I know the size is now a little bit different because Valentina's cut more weight and stuff, but I feel like if she took a little bit of time off, got ready to go back to 35, and they did that super fight, it would be the biggest fight in women's history, obviously.
Yeah, not only were those really executed beautifully, but they were so powerful. I mean, every time she was just slamming Andrade to the canvas, and then, I mean, right into side control, right into that crucifix. And then on the feet, I mean, her striking is always on point, and it's always a beautiful thing to watch. But goddamn, every time I watch her, Paul and I talk about it. She's like, to me, she's like a superhero, man. She's like the next Avenger, fucking Black Widow in real life.
I mean, I'm convinced that she's a secret agent at this point. At first, I didn't believe it, but after that, I'm like, okay, no, she got too many skills.
Have you ever seen her shooting and stuff on YouTube? Oh, she's like a
weapon expert too.
Yeah, she's a badass, man.
Well, she's got the gun tattooed on her on her side anyway.
That's no joke right there. Well, London, what did you think of the Usman Masvidal fight? Because frankly, that's where we all thought we were going to see the wrestling, right? And then it comes out. We had Masvidal talking a lot of shit. I mean, not just up in prior to the fight, but during the fight. You know, he's clowning every time he gets punched, and then. Man, he got slept.
Yeah, he did.
He got sold.
Were you surprised?
I'm surprised more off the Jorge antics. I don't know why he was fighting like that. No head movement, hands down, standing right in front of him. First of all, people think because wrestlers are wrestlers, they can't hit hard, which is literally like the most, it's really uncommon to see a wrestler that don't hit hard. Like, you gotta think about it. When you're generating power, that's usually coming from your legs and your hips. Wrestlers tend to have really strong hips and legs. Once you learn how to turn those hips, you're gonna rock people. Chad Mendes used to take people head off. Johnny Hendricks take people head off. Like, DC's knocking people out. Like, wrestlers genuinely can knock people out. Like, Cody Garbrandt, he's a wrestler too, but most people don't know he's a wrestler out of Ohio. Like, when wrestlers learn how to use their hands, this is the last person you want to stand in front of. And he's acting like Usman is 125 pounds. Usman is a big 170. He has power. He's not like some scrawny guy who can't generate power in his hips and stuff. You've seen him hurt people, regardless if they're grapplers or not. Like, you don't just stand in front of a wrestler, especially knowing wrestlers usually headhunt and they usually look for knockouts. So when he stood in front of Usman, I'm like, bro, you're gonna get yourself hurt. No head movement, hands down, and then he gets flatlined. Like, that's what you get. Like, why would you do that? Especially from Masvidal, who was known for having really good head movement. You go watch his fights or earlier fights, like, this guy has great head movement.
Even the Darren Till fight.
Yeah. He has great head movement, and you just throw that away because you think that the champion of the world, who's 170 pounds, and he's been stopping people. He's with Trevor Whitman for he's sake. Like, keep that into account when you get in the ring. Okay, I don't think he hits hard, but he's training with Trevor Whitman. He have really great strikers, so let me just stay on point. And he paid for it.
That's what we're talking about a little bit before also, is like, I feel like the evolution of Usman striking since he's gone to that camp was almost like a blessing in disguise, because he got kind of kicked out of his camp with the whole Gilbert fight, ends up over there with Trevor Whitman. And now in his last, you know, two or three fights, I feel like his striking has just looked completely different. Like, before in the Colby fight, looked a little robotic, kind of flat. He was just kind of just keeping Colby away with his jab. He wasn't really like throwing the shots that he was throwing last night. Like, it was completely a different striking game overall, I feel like.
Yeah, because Trevor Whitman's been in this game helping MMA fighters for a while. I mean, he's known for his boxing. You go look up his resume. Trevor Whitman knows what he's doing. And now you notice everyone who's went over there striking is looking phenomenal. Justin Gaethje, when he fought Tony Ferguson, Rose is killing people. Now Usman is killing people with his jab and turning his hips and knocking people out. Before, he wasn't doing that, but now you clearly see with that jab, which is not utilized a lot or enough in MMA, that he's using that as a deadly weapon. If someone's popping a hard jab at you, that's a good indicator that they're working, they're striking.
Yeah, I talk about that jab on the show all the time because I agree 100% is underutilized in MMA. And you know who on the card showed off an excellent jab last night? It was Anthony Smith. Man,
Killing
his
with
jab was
stick.
amazing.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And it really showed how that one punch, when it's utilized right, can just kill somebody. I mean, it can change the whole fight.
Yeah.
Overall, it was a really exciting card. Some of the UFC cards here lately have been a bit of a disappointment, but we thought this one was great. Your thoughts on the card overall?
That card was one of my favorite cards in recent memories. That was, I mean, five finishes on the main card, which is already crazy. And then on top of that,
Four
like,
finishes, some
even
horrific shit.
with freak accidents, bro, like, they were getting after it from early prelims to the main card. They were getting after it. So that's one of my favorite cards in recent times. They definitely, that break they took really excited the fighters, because all you could see the energy running through every fighter and how much you could feel the crowd bringing back. I felt like when Anthony Smith came, I was like,
Oh,
okay.
yeah.
Oh yeah, you could feel it when he came out to the return of the Mac and the way he was moving. You start seeing a lot more confidence and swagger to the fighters. You
You
like, yeah.
literally texted me that during it.
Yeah, I said that exact thing. You could just tell he was feeling it, man, in the best way possible.
Yeah, and he sure fought that way too.
Yeah.
Best performance in a long time from him.
Yeah, he
Yeah,
needed it.
outside of, Chris Weidman, I thought same thing. That card was amazing. Weidman, of course, was horrific.
Yeah,
Oh,
just horrific.
that's crazy how that happened.
And just like the odds that has only happened in MMA three times, well, in the UFC three times. And Chris Weidman's been a part of two of them. Like, that's nuts.
I know, on the receiving end, and now, I mean, I had that with Silva. Now he gets the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Man, poor guy. Hope he
Shit.
recovers well.
Yeah, fuck.
Yeah,
I guess his
especially
wife.
for
Yeah, I
yeah,
guess his
late in
wife
his
came out and
career
said
too.
the.
Very similar to Anderson at the time. When that happened to Anderson, a lot of people thought Anderson was done. So I mean, hopefully Chris can do. I mean, Anderson hasn't looked as great as he did since, but at least he's been able to prolong his career after. I hope Chris is able to, get something similar,
His wife came out and said the surgery went good, so best wishes to him.
Yeah.
For
Well, listen,
sure.
London, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah.
Hopefully, as the restrictions here in Vegas start to ease, we can get you in studio for a second interview here in the future. But why don't you tell everybody listening and those watching on YouTube where they can connect with you, your Instagram, your Twitter, anything else?
On Instagram you can find me at SuperDuckLT, and Twitter is underscore I'm the answer, and I'm active on there. So if anybody wants to talk MMA or have conversations about anything, you can hit me up on there.
All right.
All right, awesome. Thanks so much, brother.
Thanks
Yeah,
for
thank
coming.
you. All
Take it
right.
easy. Well, man, London seems like a really cool guy, Paul. While you're firing that joint up there, why don't you tell me a little bit more? You mentioned during the interview that you wrestled with him. Was it in school?
Yeah, even at like the club level too.
And at the club level as well?
We've been I've known London since I was like 9 or 10 years old. 8 maybe. Maybe even younger than that.
Have you guys ever faced off against each other, or were you in different weight
Only we
classes?
were really, really young. We were on the same team for a long time. We were really, really young. We were never the same size, so like we were always like two weight class, like our weight class next to each other, or two weight classes like next to each other. So we were always like partners in the room. So
Sure. So you got to travel together
All that shit. Like
and
we'd
remain
be,
friends without having to have any competitive shit going on between you. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully here with the restrictions easing, like we talked about with him here
yeah.
In Vegas, we see Tough Enough get a show going
Yeah.
soon. and we should definitely check it out. Like we told him, it's something that we've discussed a lot before everything got shut down.
Yeah, so, we were supposed to go to one of his fights, and then it got canceled.
Yeah. Well, hopefully
he was talking about that in the interview. They've had a few people that just like back out, like on him. So it's like
that happens more on the amateur level and the regional scene both, because fighters are, and especially at these early points, a little bit more selective trying to manage their career, you know. And he's a dangerous guy, and fighters are going to want to avoid people in ways that they really can't get away with once you get into the big leagues. You have to fight, but when you're building your record up and learning, sometimes you want to avoid the dangerous guys as much as you can. So he has had a lot of fights get canceled, and maybe that'll not happen as much because people are a little bit starved to get fights, you know, across all levels of MMA outside of, you know, the UFC. I mean, even Bellator's just now getting rolling. PFL just now in these regionals. I'm sure these guys are starving for fights too. So
yeah, for sure.
Well, as we're smoking, is this the wedding or were those both Mob Boss that you?
That was the Mob Boss. The other one was half wedding cake, man. Mob Boss.
That's why it tasted a little bit different. I was wondering, but then we just got talking and I forgot about it. Well, we've had some, we mentioned that I honestly thought the UFC Fight Night Vegas Apex fights were over. It was so great seeing the crowd there, but we do have a Fight Night Vegas coming up from the Apex Center.
I think it's going to have a mini crowd.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know. Because, like, it's May 1st, right?
Well, it's Dominic Reyes versus Yuri, how do you say his last name?
Prochka.
He's the guy from Risen, right?
Yeah.
I remember seeing his first performance. We were over at your house.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
He looked incredible.
Who did he sleep? Who was it? It was No Time,
Jimmy
right?
Jimmy Manoa.
No, it was No Time.
No, it was No Time?
Yeah, he slept.
Man, he looked
with
his good.
His hands down the whole time.
Yeah, that's right. I thought, I was like, this guy's not, you can't do that at the UFC level. Yeah. But he looked really good.
Oh, fuck.
This is a strong test here against Dominic Reyes.
Oh, yeah, Dominic Reyes. And this is also a good chance for Dominic Reyes to put his stamp on this division that, like, hey, man, I had a tough out, but I'm going to make my way back to the title. And this would be like the fight to get this going, you know?
Yeah, he definitely needs a win here. And since Jan went on to, you know, win the title and then beat Israel Adesanya, his loss isn't that bad. When you lose to elite level fighters, it's not as devastating as if you thought maybe at the time Jan wasn't as good as he is. So I'm interested to see how he bounces back, and I'm certainly interested in Yuri to see how he moves forward, if he's really as good as he seems to be. And if he continues to keep his hands that low in fights.
We'll see.
I get it. When you can do that in certain levels, but when you get to the fucking top of the game, you're going to run across somebody who's going to murk your fucking ass because you're doing
legendary
that.
Legendary Polish power.
You have to be... I mean, look, even Connor. I mean, everybody who thinks they have all this great movement, You can get caught, let alone if you're sticking your fucking chin out and asking for it. Look at fucking Masvidal.
There's too many variables involved
to
do shit like that.
You can't be keeping your hands down. So we'll see. We'll see how that turns out. What's the other interesting fight on that card? I mean, there's not a whole lot of action on it, but there's this.
We got Merab. I'm not even going to do it.
Dude, that's why I passed it to you, man. I put the whole how you say his last name to you.
Duvishelli.
I'm sorry. We have no idea.
I know who Merab is, though.
I know who he is. I've seen his fights.
I've seen his fights. He's a great fighter. He fights out of Ray Longo's gym. He trains with Aljo. He's out here in Vegas now, so I bet he's probably at Extreme Couture as well. And
probably.
He's taking on Cody Stanman.
That's a good solid fight. Yeah, I like it. Rest of the card is what it is.
Man. Hey, I got to talk to you about something real quick because it reminded me of Aljamain Sterling. Bro, did you know that Aljamain Sterling's neck was so bad that before that Peter Yan fight, his arm was atrophying already? And
I saw that
shit is nuts. He had to get like a fucking disc replacement where they had to go through the front of his neck to fucking replace his shit.
Anybody saying that the timing or something was bullshit and he's using that as an excuse to hang on to the title longer, yeah, needs to be slapped.
Yeah.
You're just an ignorant fool.
Yeah.
Like, that is serious, serious stuff right there, my friend. Like, that's no joke.
Yeah, no way.
So, good for him that he can get that surgery done, man. He's going to feel like a whole new man, and that's had to affect his fighting.
There's no way it didn't, yeah.
That's yeah.
For real.
I hope he gets better quick, too. Jeez. Mm-hmm. These guys, man, going out there and fighting with that kind of stuff going on is, you're making a sacrifice.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's about it for the UFC fight night. So let's transfer over to a little bit of boxing.
Huh? Yeah, we've had some boxing news. You know, somewhat of a slower week, but we still got some news coming out.
Yep.
Before we get to the fight we want to talk about, let's talk about some news on the Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury front.
Yeah.
A site fee was agreed upon, which a lot of people don't know. These big venues pay a site fee to host boxing. It's not the other way around. Like Matchroom and Arum and Top Rank, they don't fucking go
rent
the arena.
Out.
The arena pays them because it turns into a giant commercial for the arena, because everything is, we're here at the arena. Mm-hmm. All the arenas and all the shots. It's in every fucking news broadcast. It's a massive fucking commercial that, so they pay site fees.
Uh-huh.
And this is a record-breaking site fee of $150 million for this fight.
Damn.
I haven't heard, as of when we're recording this, where or who's making the specific offer, but that it's been agreed to. It is likely in the Middle East, and that's $75 million, give or take, for each fighter. I mean,
damn.
That's where they're getting the purse to pay these guys, which is just incredible.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, and it's another major step in getting this fight done.
Yeah, true.
Because it's the fight that we all want to see. Mm-hmm. It's just so many hurdles. Every time we think that it's going to get done, it's not happening.
Yeah.
So that's a big one. Now, we do have other heavyweight action, correct, Paul?
Yep. We got Chris Arreola taking on Andy Ruiz this weekend. Andy Ruiz looking a lot better shape since his last fight, I'll tell you that.
He looks like a whole new man.
Yeah. That speed in his hands, man, it's dangerous when he's in the right shape.
Well, he looks even in better shape than when he beat Joshua the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always been a little bit on the rotund side, okay? But then after he beat Joshua, I mean, he put on like 25 pounds, and it maybe sure shit wasn't that. Muscle. I mean,
no, I think it was like 40 pounds, because I think the first fight he weighed like 247. Then he weighed 280. So.
Yeah, he weighed 280 and looked atrocious.
Yeah.
Now he looks like, I mean, he's
probably like, around like the 230s.
Yeah, he looks in quite excellent shape.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what he weighs in, you know, at for that fight.
Yeah.
And I'd have to pick him in this one, you know, looking like that. I would, when I first heard this fight announced, I was like, yeah, whatever.
He better win this fight because
he's talking about,
you know, his opponent's 40 years old and kind of past his prime and, you know, kind of.
Yeah,
more than kind of. He's all the top level, you know, the upper echelon that Andy Ruiz wants to be a part of have all defeated this man. You know what I'm saying? So he's got to win this fight.
It's a good setup for him, and I think it's a test to see if he would take it seriously, honestly. Yeah. I mean, they're matching him up the way he should, because if he came in the shape he was against Joshua, I mean, you're probably going to lose even to Chris. Mm-hmm. But we have BKFC 17, which isn't boxing, but it is boxing.
It is.
You know, and I give credit to a lot of the boxing news websites that I like to read.
Mm-hmm.
They all cover the bare knuckle fighting in the BKFC.
Well, then
shit. And they even like live report the rounds just like they would a regular boxing event.
Yeah.
And I think that's good. It's good for the sport. It's one of my favorite, you know, new up and coming sports, as I've often said on the show. And we've got a good one, also heavyweight action. We've got the winner of this card gets to fight
Joy Beltran
for the champion. So we've got Dylan Kleckler versus Josh Burns.
Yeah, I've seen Glicker fight. He's tough.
And I've seen a lot of Burns highlights and one of his early fights, too. He's tough as well. Both of these guys are legit.
Yeah.
This is a solid fight. Once again, I can promise you that while there might be a whole lot of names on here that people aren't going to know, so we're not necessarily going to talk about, you know, the whole card because all of these cards are worth watching, and we are not sponsored by BKFC. I'm telling you, this is a fight fan. Their shit is $4.99 a month, and you will get this event. That if you just go order the pay-per-view, it's $20. But if you just get their BKFC app or have it on your TV, like I run it on my off my Fire Stick on my TV. Dude, they're great. They're super entertaining. It's Friday night. It does have a lot of good fights. Mark Godbear is coming back. He's a very popular guy from England. The whole card, Lorenzo Hunt's on the card versus Josh Dyer. That's going to be a good fight. All the way down, it's going to be good action, even if you've never heard of the fighters. And as you tune in, you can kind of grow with the sport. Yep. I expect this to be very entertaining. And the main event is definitely a fight of consequence. Because we've got Joey Beltran waiting for the winner. And then we've got Frank Mir.
Entering BKFC as well.
He's already signed, but we don't have an announcement that he's officially transitioned over. But everything was riding on how he did in the Steve Cunningham fight. And he certainly did well enough to show that he can fuck some people up in BKFC.
Yeah.
Okay, he even got some decent respect on the aforementioned boxing from writers there that, while he certainly didn't win, a lot of people gave him a round, and a lot of people were impressed with how well he fared.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. We've got another decent weekend coming up, bolstered for me mainly by the BKFC 17. The UFC fight card is what it is, but the boxing's not bad either. So I'm looking forward to it, my friend. What about you?
Same thing. I think, this whole BKFC thing, I feel like it's a good, way to... For, a lot of these guys who are good strikers who are coming out of the UFC or, someone like Tyron Woodley. Tyron Woodley and BKFC would be legit to me.
His contract is at a close. He fought it out. A lot of people were mistakenly thinking he got cut. He was not cut, no.
Parted ways.
No, his contract came to an end. They haven't offered him a new one yet, or maybe they have, but he's a free agent.
Yeah, they said that they're not interested. So, basically, they mutually parted ways. It's not like he was cut from the UFC. He was already a free agent, and the UFC just said that they didn't want...
Dude, a fight or two in BKFC might be just what Woodley needs.
Yeah, that'd be sick. Dude, he's talking about boxing Jake Paul, so why not?
Is Jake Paul going to fight anybody his own size ever? I mean, I know Woodley is big, but he also fights at 170.
One thing we didn't talk about earlier, DC pressed the fuck out of him.
I saw that. Jake Paul.
Put his finger all in his face. Said, "You motherfucker, quit talking about me." Then Jake Paul, after the security gets in the way, goes, "Let's make the fight." You weren't saying that when you had a fucking finger in your face. So I don't know.
They would never make that fight, would they?
Bro, I don't know. Jake Paul's crazy.
Imagine. I mean, Jake Paul might think he is, but Daniel Cormier's not going to go fight a YouTuber. Daniel Cormier
would smash him, dude.
Yeah, that's not...
He's not Ben Askren, dude.
And he's not some small guy. I mean,
and you think you're telling me, all right.
That's the heavyweight champion of the world, the light heavyweight champion of the world.
You're telling me that fucking Stipe had outside of those body shots, had a hard time finishing DC. Never knocked DC out all the way. He TKO'd DC. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
dude, I clown on DC a lot. Yeah, DC would destroy Jake Paul in a pure boxing match. Yeah, of course.
Smash him. Or Woodley, too. What the fuck is he thinking, man? He's knocking down the wrong doors. He's knocking on all the doors he knows no one will answer, too.
Well, I still think he's going to do everything he can to avoid a real boxer, because a real boxer is still going to piece him up, even as any highly decorated amateur, in my opinion, is going to eat him alive, let alone a pro.
Yeah.
So he's going to keep picking on guys he thinks he has a chance against, but I can't tell if he's just trying to fucking get noise or if he really thinks he can fight Daniel Cormier.
I mean, don't think he could fight Daniel Cormier.
That's Cormier would murder him in that stupid little boxing ring.
Yeah.
And
Cormier would take that shot and not be... First of all, he wouldn't have his hands down like that. And second of all, he'd eat every single shot of Jake Paul's ever thrown.
Cormier is a decorated UFC striker. I mean, Ben Askren is a decorated fighter.
Yeah.
He doesn't know shit about striking.
Yeah. And exactly.
His week Jake with Paul's Freddie
gonna, he's going to box Damian Maya next.
Right. He's going to fucking go for that Dylan Danis smoke or some bullshit. Probably. He can win.
Or fight his brother. Although, did you see they're going to, they rescheduled the Floyd fight with him, I think, for like June 2nd or something like that. Right.
Okay.
We'll see.
We'll see. I guess Floyd saw them 1.4 million buys and it was
Dana
like,
said
okay.
Those are bullshit, that those aren't real.
Did he? I didn't hear that. I didn't watch the presser.
I was telling you, he was all hot about that shit. He was like, those aren't even real numbers. They're lying. That's what he said.
Well, Askren said he only got $1 million total from that shit. 500,000 off the fucking pay-per-view and 500,000.
So maybe they didn't do
from
shit.
The fucking,
they're just out there saying shit.
From the purse, guaranteed.
It's still good money, though.
It's still $1 million to go out and do that. Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not clowning. I'm just saying.
For sure. You know what I'm saying, though? It's like, I wonder what's legit and what's not. Because here's the thing. Triller is a good idea or whatever. But if those numbers are fake, they're not going to be around long.
No, they've got to be getting financing coming in. They need it to look good. But I'm sure they would have an agreement to show the actual numbers to any financing, any money coming in. So who knows? Private company, we might not ever get the actual
numbers.
Well,
we haven't really ever got the numbers even released. It's always like industry, like guys who are like reporters and stuff, but like, you know, they're like, oh, it's an estimated amount.
Right.
So it's like, who even knows?
We'll see what they do next. Yeah. I hope they tone it back down after that last nonsense. I've never been so hyped for the one event.
Keep Oscar off the coke.
And then disappointed by the second event as with this company.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Oscar, yeah, he came out with his apology since our last episode. It was a joke.
What did he say?
He's just like, I was a little drunk.
Oh, wow.
Guys, you weren't drunk, bro. Everybody knows
his face was like swollen.
Yeah, he was all coked up, dude.
Yeah.
He was not...
It is what it is.
It's embarrassing.
Embarrassing as fuck.
Well, we'll see what they do.
Yeah.
But overall, this has been a great episode.
Yep.
It's fun having your friend London Thomas on the show.
Yep.
If you're brand new, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts from. We're on Amazon Music. We're on Audible now as well. Spotify. Our website is currently being updated, so it's down right now. So if you go there and it's not working, don't worry. It'll be back up soon with a brand new look. But normally, all that information is in one handy spot, including how to listen to us on KLVM Radio. Where's that at, Paul?
Oh, swatman.com. But yeah, it's down right now. But when it's back up, head over there and click the gear button and support the podcast, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Peace.